This is episode 21 of That Time I Got Reincarnated in the same world as an anime podcaster, where we talk about anime, manga, isekai, and all the meta in between. I'm your host, Isekai Sensei-sama, aka Brad, and I'm joined in this weeb cabal by Bento Baggins, aka Ben.
Konnichiwa.
And Kermit D. Grog.
Ahoy hoy.
We're friends who've been watching anime together for a long time, talking about that anime, as well as the manga we've been reading, and so those conversations turned into this podcast. Don't forget to check us out on social media, rate the podcast wherever you can, and tell your friends. You can find links in the description and on our website, animepodcasterreincarnation.com. All right, we got just a couple news items today to go over before we jump into things.
Small news week. I feel like last episode was when the new season was starting up, so...
Yeah, the new season start is when we'll go over the majority of things.
The big rush.
So these are these middle bits. These middle episodes aren't going to have as much. But big news.
Big news.
Big news. If you are listening to this, you can currently... join us on our Discord server.
Whoa, I am also surprised.
Yeah. At the time of recording, I haven't actually opened it up yet.
That's why it's a surprise.
But when you're listening to this, dear listener, you can, in fact, join our Discord server and talk to us.
Big wow.
There will be a link up on our website under our social links page.
It will direct you directly to the Shonen Flop Discord.
I do recommend their Discord. It's a good time.
Just ask them to make a room for us there.
But in addition to having that open, I am going to have special roles for our patrons, which we don't have any yet.
That's
but
the Patreon
if you
classic.
Join our patron and you have your Discord account linked on Patreon, you will get a special role on the server.
You have a special room that I won't mute.
So you'll get special access to us, by which I mean we might talk to you more often. No, that's definitely not true. I'm going to talk to everybody all the time because I'm
Brett can't stop.
I'll talk to you more.
I'm
often.
Starving for attention. Anyway, so join us on our Discord. We hope to see you there. And very important news. This is probably going to be a little bit of a discussion. But it is the last news item for this episode. The Frieren trailer dropped recently.
Ah, yes, that is very pertinent to this podcast.
Yeah. So that is going to be coming out on September 29th. And apparently the first episode is going to be 2 hours long.
They've been doing that a lot lately.
Hmm.
With the longer opener?
Yeah.
I feel like there were some... that were like an hour long before, but like this hour and a half, 2 hour thing they're doing now. It's definitely,
I'll be honest. I guess you're right. It's a little bit of a discussion because I can't imagine what they're going to do. Frieren doesn't really have a 2 hour prologue.
It looks like they're going to cover the entire setup to get to like the journey. So
like all the way to getting the first girl.
Yeah, I believe so. Maybe even...
I mean, it looks like from the trailer they're doing the backstory of the original four heroes going on their adventure, which, I don't know. I've been very apprehensive of all things Frieren, both anime and manga recently, so I don't... The trailer seems like it has a lot of that, and I don't know if it's just because I don't remember it.
I didn't see anything in there that I thought was different from the first volume of the manga.
Maybe nothing like crazy off the rails, but it seems like you get little flashbacks, but a lot of it is just inferred through general, here's the hero's quest sort of thing. I don't want to say necessarily isekai, because you see that mimicked there a lot too, but just here's the Final Fantasy Dragon quest, get your party, go slay the Demon King.
Yeah.
Set up, and a lot of what it was the looking back on it, and the through actual meaningful flashbacks, the like deeper little emotional resonance and moments and what our main character, Frieren, is thinking.
Well, and I think that's probably what they're doing, is they're going to get that out of the way in the first long episode. So then the rest of the episodes are going to, you know, concentrate on that exploration of character that Frieren really is. I will say the animation looked really good. It mimicked the manga style quite a lot, but it didn't look like it was going to be doing that, like, this is just the animated manga thing, like One Punch Man season 2 did. It looks like they took the style and like put a lot of effort
into it. I think they're putting some stuff. I mean, you're not going to get a 2-hour opener for just a, here's the bottom of the barrel, we're just crapping this out.
I would hope so.
I don't think you get to break the rules if you're not being given some level of prestige.
I wonder what the logic is for these extended length episodes. Like with Demon Slayer doing a 70-minute finale. Like narratively, it makes sense to group those episodes together, but they must just be abandoning the television market entirely.
I mean,
because you're not going to do that in reruns.
That's
I mean,
a good
reruns
point.
Are kind of like, yeah. I don't know what Japanese television is right now, but I know American television, like what's premiering in an animated format. I guess anime might be a little different. Like, what's premiering there? That's not how almost any company does it anymore. TV's just playing all the time. It's not where the new stuff drops. That's all on the streaming services now, which aren't beholden to like scheduling times and reruns and all that stuff.
But you could never, I mean, you'd have to split it up to put it on a TV time slot.
I mean, they did that back in the day. I mean, a lot of old cartoons, their quote unquote, like big pilot is a movie that they would just in the future turn into like 2 or 3 episodes that if you got lucky, they'd play, you know, either next to each other or within weeks of each other. But sometimes it was just like, and it's this episode. It's the second part of this 3-parter.
The cynical anti-capitalist in me says that they're doing it because once someone watches something that long, they're going to watch the rest of it, even if they're not that into it because of like sunk cost fallacy.
That feels like something that would work exclusively on you.
Yes. Thank you, Ben. I was literally about to say the same exact thing. This seems like something that would affect Brad specifically.
Do you know how many movies I've just not gone to see because I'm like, I'm not sitting there for 3 hours?
Anyway, I think it looks good. So I'm excited for that.
It looks solid. It looks like it's being given. The thing that's going to make it hit for me the most is tone and pacing. And I mean, I'm sure we're going to watch it, and I'm sure we'll have a small report back for it.
Yeah. I will say I was a little surprised about the voice actress for Frieren. I figured they were going to go for more of a, you know, that sort of little girl kind of thing that they do all the time. But no, it's a fully grown adult woman doing a fully grown adult woman voice. So
a nice change of pace.
Yeah.
That fits the character.
Also, she has to talk to a child and that they both sounded like that. Even if she looks younger and smaller, I don't think that voice could capture a lot of the emotional nuance that's in there in Frieren. So again, cautiously optimistic.
And all the other voice actors sounded really good. The hero and, you know, the priest and the dwarf and all them. We didn't see Fern and Stark, so
I don't think they're going to. I think that's what this opening is just going to be, literally the original adventure.
Maybe they'll, you know. Yeah, maybe. They might. I don't know. We'll have to see.
Indeed, we will. When is that dropping? Do we know?
September 29th.
September 29th.
So make sure to check that out. We will as well, but you should go on our Discord and tell us if you liked it.
Go on our Discord, which doesn't exist yet, and watch it. A thing that hasn't come out yet.
Kakoi. All right, well, since I don't have anything for this, we're just going to jump right into it. Kermit, what do you got for us today?
So this episode, we are talking about, I guess I want to, like, my brain's been saying genre drift, but the way that what the popular genre is changes over time in both a big picture sense and also a more small picture, nitty gritty sense. That one's more specific to Shonen Jump, but we'll start with big picture.
So are you talking about like, the genre that is like getting the most media at any
point? Genres that have disappeared or appeared, like the main thing that started this was from a lot of things I've read or I'm reading recently of older works, a lot of the ones usually Ben actually talks about, your Battle Angel Alita, your Trigun, your Akira, I feel like I'm missing one, but another kind of cyberpunky one in that vein.
Cowboy Bebop,
I guess, kind of fits. I was thinking more on the manga side, but
Fist of the North Star,
I guess, kind of fits. Is that cyberpunk slash apocalypse was kind of a big thing back in the 80s and the 90s, mm-hmm. and you don't really see it anymore today unless somebody's doing a specific throwback, like Megalobox or something, which was also made to specifically look like an old anime, even at the time and however many years ago that one came out now. And I was thinking about, like, I wonder why that is. Like, what happened that caused that, both that it could gain popularity, which is maybe a little bit too early on my timeline of knowledge of popular things, but also that it just kind of vanished.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So, like, back then, those cyberpunk, post-apocalyptic, those kind of shows were sort of like the pillars. Those were the big ones that got all the attention. So even though you had other ones that were, you know, maybe a shonen battler or, you know, a shoujo, you know, like a Sailor Moon kind of, like those kind of ones, those cyberpunk post-apocalyptic ones were the main ones. They got all the attention. Everybody talked about them. And then that sort of, I guess, shonen battler sort of took over, right?
I guess, see, like, this is where it gets a little bit hazier about what necessarily took it from it, and it was more of an exploration of, like, what made them go away? Why isn't this a thing people are doing now?
Mm-hmm.
'Cause it seemed like they were such, like, when I think back about old anime, especially stuff I heard about growing up in, like, hushed whispers of reverence, a lot of them are these more, I guess, adult cyberpunky ones akin to Akira or Battle Angel, where it's just like, oh, these are the classics. And it just seems weird that these pillars are now just sort of left in the dust and bygone. They're not being iterated on necessarily.
We've talked about it a little bit before. I think some of that is a discrepancy between what was popular in America and what was popular in Japan. Because the audience for anime and manga was probably going to be the existing comic book audience if you were going to try to bring it to America. So yeah. They brought over the things that were similar to what was going on in America at the time, like your Judge Dredd, your Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, your Frank Miller Batman.
That was the time of the gritty superhero. Yeah.
So I think that's a big part of why the more adult-oriented, more like sci-fi dystopian stuff came over. Because there was still Shonen Battlers. I mean, probably what was big before Dragon Ball.
Saint Seiya.
I know vaguely about Latin America. But yeah, they did go away even in Japan. And I'm thinking of like the maybe this is an unpopular opinion, but I feel like Mecha really fell off.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah, that's it. Like, I guess not in the shape it was before, not that I can speak very knowledgeably of it.
I feel like Mecha never really went away, but it definitely, like,
it dropped in popularity. Yeah. It never felt like the main thing. Like, the people who were into Mecha were very into Mecha, and other people just sort of had maybe one that they liked.
But those, yeah, the
like,
the
there's
older
still always
ones,
a Gundam.
Yeah, the older Gundams, your sort of original Gundam series and stuff, like, those were, I would, if not a pillar, then pillar adjacent. They were definitely really big. And the Gundam stuff is still, obviously, I mean, there's a Gundam series out right now. So that's obviously still going on. I'm struggling to think of any, like, post-apocalyptic one. But cyberpunk is, there's
cyberpunk,
still stuff
that
like
more that. Adult thing. And I, Ben, I really liked your point with that. And that kind of makes sense that as I'm reading, when I was reading your copy of Battle Angel and reading through Akira, that they are published, I think, both by Dark Horse, an American comics company, and not like, oh, Shonen Jump from Japan is publishing their works, or whatever company gets the publishing rights to these things. Like, those were very clearly brought under that old system of, like, hey, we can bring this to America, and we don't have to do as much un-Japanifying to them, however they looked at it back in the day.
That's actually, that's probably a really important point, is that a post-apocalyptic wasteland or a cyberpunk future
doesn't look like a Japanese high school.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Even if it can have like pieces of it in there, it's wild and off the bounds. Man, this is where I wish I could just instantly like see through all things. 'Cause you're right. Like, this is a very American Western lens that these are the ones that we got. And then thus in our circles, it became the pillars because it's what we had on hand and it was just so mind-bogglingly different, but maybe it wasn't the same.
You know, I do think the point even stands, though, because even in Japan these days, that seems less popular.
Because we're getting everything pretty much right now, unless it's the, like, the fringes of fringes to fringes, and even then sometimes that gets here in some way, shape, or form. I'm not really seeing anything that looks like that, that is doing that kind of stuff. And if it is, it's very much an amalgamation of other things with it, or just kind of taking some things. And, you know, obviously a lot of these, we don't necessarily do a lot of research. A lot of this is just kind of taking our own understandings and knowledge bases and putting them together. And I'd be curious if there was, like, if I could plot the points. And I don't remember, I feel like we talked about it, but maybe it was somebody else I had that conversation with, that somebody had theorized that when the economic bubble burst, they stopped doing apocalypses, because it's like, hi, the current world is kind of apocalypse. We can't really...
It's not an escape anymore.
It's not an escape to look at these messed... Like, it's not an escape to look at these places messed up by the system that we're in now. We're in that system now. Like, we're in the messed up state.
So, I definitely think there's probably something to that, but I have an alternative hypothesis, okay, or maybe something to just go along with it. You know, it could be multiple things.
Yeah.
So, as we said, like, those cyberpunk post-apocalyptic series don't have, like, a whole lot of Japan, the Japan culture, you know, even though it's in Japanese, whatever. I think that those were probably a really good introduction for Western audiences into anime and manga, because it didn't have those cultural touchstones. And then I wonder if, you know, years later, as anime and manga is becoming bigger in the West, and the consumers of anime and manga are much more willing to learn about Japanese culture, and in fact, maybe seek it out in a lot of ways, because they're going, hey, this thing's from Japan. I think that's really cool. What else is there about Japan? I want to learn about that.
I think there's another thing, specifically if we're talking about, like, the, like, post-apocalypse, cyberpunk, and mecha. I think they all suffer from kind of the same thing. Mecha is very uniquely Japanese. The whole giant kaiju thing that has always been Japanese since Godzilla. But the other stuff, like cyberpunk, was always a blend of East and West. Like, William Gibson has... It takes place in Japan. Neuromancer starts in Japan. It goes back to America, back to Japan. The currency they use is the new yen.
I think Shadowrun has that same thing.
He has, yeah. It, and Shadowrun's heavily based on Neuromancer. So one of the things William Gibson said about Neuromancer years later is he's kind of disavowed the trilogy. not so much in the way that, like, he hates it, but he acknowledges it was way off in a lot of ways. It predicted a lot of things, but it was also way off about a lot of things. And he was really disappointed with how the internet turned out.
Was he trying to predict things?
He was imagining a future, like a dark future. He's not an optimist by any stretch.
Well, he predicted the now.
But he didn't. He thinks the internet today is just, like, boring, dull, vapid.
It's getting worse. So.
Yeah, whereas in his, it was filled with criminals and exploitation, but people were at least checked in, I guess.
Oh, it's still filled with criminals and exploitation. We just ignore it.
Yeah. He didn't envision, like, four big sites that everybody went to. He still envisioned a big internet where you would go machine to machine.
That it was like a place.
But
an interconnected network.
We also used to have stuff like Judge Dredd and, like, I feel like the 80s was the start of a lot of things. It was the start of people owning computers. It was the start of a very serious environmental movement. And everybody was like, okay, this is how the world's ending. All these new things are, like, going to change everything and we're all going to die.
Yeah, we're in the Cold War, collectively, the planet. I mean, you know, even if I don't know what Japan's relationship with it, I know there are American bases there watching what...
The only thing they hate more Vietnam than the American imperialist is the communist.
China is up to with all this stuff. So I guess that's my follow-up question, Ben. You might actually be more knowledgeable on that. I guess we had a similar decline here in the West, didn't we?
Yeah.
Like, because it's like, we're kind of out of the Cold War, I guess. And, like, technology has settled in. Like, you know, even though I know we have phones and that's definitely a big paradigm shift, the idea of, like, computers and all this stuff this technology can do has kind of entered a more, not like, oh my gosh, thing.
Well, and how many mecha anime start with a 14-year-old kid pressed into military service by adults because they need his youth for some reason? He has, like, if it's Gundam, it's because he's...
That's a very Japanese thing.
Yeah, he's got the, like, coordinate thing or whatever.
Why didn't we just build bigger cockpits?
Well, it was always something to do with the kid being a kid. In Gundam, I think it had a lot to do with the people raised in the space colonies were developing some power that made them better pilots. In Evangelion, there's, you know, all that crap, but only people born after the event, for whatever reason, won't give spoilers, can pilot the Gundams.
Spoilers, I mean, for a 20-year-old anime. In the vein of, like, I mean, of following, like, the fighting game tournament space, where it's just, like, younger people are going to come up and at some point dethrone the old guys just because by being younger, the reaction times are better.
But how about use young people because they're more disposable? It doesn't take as long to build them.
I mean, there you go. That's probably some of that's. There's probably a mecha anime about
I think
that.
A lot of it was the younger generation feeling betrayed by the older generation and just being forced to fight their battles for them.
Yeah, there you go.
There's a lot of
that's
angst
so in, unrealistic.
There's a lot of angst in mecha, and there's a lot of angst in all this stuff, and I think that has sort of taken a different form.
I don't know how you can be unhappy piloting a gigantic robot, but okay.
Well, because they're killing people, and they're the only one who has to, and they're the only one who has to keep going in, and it's always, the mecha pilot is always some antisocial loser who is not, like, the military jock who
meanwhile,
was meant to do it.
All the antisocial losers are like, I want to drive a big fucking robot.
Yeah. But they don't want the stress.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It just dawned on me that, I guess in a small way, both in East and West, Cyberpunk is kind of back. Literally, Cyberpunk, the game, came out, and then they made, I don't know if it's Trigger or just a lot of Trigger animators, they made Cyberpunk Edgerunners, which is a pretty good anime.
I didn't want to...
That
wanna...
is very cyberpunky, but I don't know how much that's like... Because that's, you know, how much is the one amongst many, but how do you bring back something without somebody starting it back up? Is this a throwback, or is this a new first step? Because... What the dystopian future looks like now, from technology we understand now, is different than what they thought in the 80s. Even if there could be, even if the 80s ones got a lot of things right, there's like new ideas. There are new hellscapes to exist in that 80s people couldn't even fathom.
Well, and I think in a lot of ways, the problems facing young people today, at least in these parts of the world, maybe a little less immediate than the Cold World. Like, I don't think people in Japan and America are necessarily afraid of getting drafted into combat right away.
Mm. Yes, agreed.
But when...
Well, not in America anymore.
When you're in Japan and, you know, Americans are fighting in Vietnam, and they're using those bases in Japan to do it. So you're seeing it the whole time. You're trying... Your government is, like, low-key supporting it because they don't want the communists moving in next door. And there's a whole bunch of problems with that. Then you get those people who grew up during that making these things in the 80s. Now the anxieties of young people are a little different. It's more like they're not afraid of, like, fighting and dying in their future. I feel like they're just afraid of just not having much of a future. Mm. There's just not much for them to do. AI is going to replace them.
Yeah. What's the apocalypse? We're, like I said, I guess I said at the start of this, what's the apocalypse? We're already living in the no future time.
I have a radical theory. Is that it's isekai.
That's, yeah. It's, oh my god, like, this leads perfectly there. That, yeah. I think that's it, Ben, because it's all about, it's not that this world will get remade, it's that I'm going to leave this
I
world
have to escape
and go
it.
To a, I literally have to escape it. That is, that's why, oh my gosh, that was such a, oh man, what a,
I wasn't going to say
what
it.
A serve set spike.
But yeah, I think that's a big part of why isekai is so popular right now, is because the fantasies of young people are simpler.
Are not here.
They just want people
just want
who
to not
like
be
them
here.
And a purpose.
Well, and
yeah, that's actually really good, because it's. I feel like, okay, I don't think I've looked at isekais through this particular lens, because they will show up, and you know what they have to do? They have to fight the Demon King, and they're given support by the government, in this case a goddess or something. They are given some sort of a boon to actually solve the problem they are tasked with solving, instead of just being left directionless to die.
Well, and think about it this way, okay? So you have you know, young men, teenagers, young men who
young men
are looking at the world around them and going, everybody seems to be okay with what's going on. You know, got all these people on their looking at their phones all the time, all their social apps, you know, going to school. These people at school, they have their friends. You know, I only have one friend or whatever. I go home and I watch anime and I'm just like, you know, I don't have anything going on in my life. And oh, there's climate change and there's, you know,
declining all this, birth rates and
the economy's in shambles, all this different stuff. And they go,
20 years ago, I would have been the only one who could pilot that giant robot. But now the giant robot runs on AI.
Right.
Yeah, it runs itself.
And so you go then, you say, you know, it's not that this world needs to change. There's nothing I can do to change this world because all these people are complacent and they're fine with it. Let's go to a different world.
You sound as if you're speaking from some sort of experience.
Huh?
No, that's a... I
have
feel
more
like,
than one friend.
I did not know that we were going to get into like deep in core stuff with this, but it fits really well and I kind of love it. And then we get the nice epilogue after one where we just delve into the nitty-gritties of the recent stuff that's not as big as this. But, like, I think that's a good point. I think that can change. I don't think we think about as much of outside stuff, of literally the state of the world affecting these things outside of just the general cycles of it, of that, you know, that whole thing that I did on Shonen Battler protagonists over time, and all of that, and how we look at things. But yeah, I guess that also shapes our collective escapism and what's popular and what people want in that space.
Is it always escapism? Is that our media is all the time forever?
I think that's what the most popular is, because I think the majority of people, a lot of people treat entertainment purely as escapism. So wouldn't you want something like that?
I think there's like, on one hand, it's fun to talk about, and I do think there is something here of like, there is a like the human organism does act with more like synchronicity than we really understand. And as cultures, we crave certain releases or certain ways to process things. Like the movie theaters were filled with as many disaster movies after 9/11 as they are filled with superhero movies today. I mean, that was the big thing for such a long time. And then, like, the zombie movies came out after that. And they had the big zombie boom. And it burns itself out and it goes in phases. It'll probably come back. But as the, you know, desert apocalypse may come back. But I think...
I wish it did.
But I think these days is...
Oh, it's coming.
Well, I think that's kind of the thing is we went from this era of... I can fight it. I can recycle. I can change I can ride my bike instead of driving
the optimism
a car.
Of the 90s.
And it did fix the ozone layer.
We did. And that's now I think that's almost part of what's playing into it, though, is what's going to happen. What is your personal plan for climate change? You can't have one because you don't control any of that.
Vote.
The world will either fix it or it won't. It's just a coin flip to you anymore. It's either going to happen or it's not. You're going to vote. That's one thing you can do like once every 4 years. The rest of the time, you just got to ignore it and do your best to get on with it.
This is getting dire, guys.
But
I'm going to move to Northern Canada.
Well, I was going to say, there's a
Manitoba.
There's a subconscious level where we're all kind of in that boat because we all share the same information. And so there's things that are going to be relaxing to you given that information, or things that won't. And we're all different. There's different genres and different ways of dealing with it. I sincerely doubt isekai writers are thinking about, like, I bet all these people dealing with climate change and global economy.
No, but it's the mass subconscious. What's the word that I want? The collective subconscious.
The zeitgeist.
It permeates it. People write what they feel, and that can capture a mood at a time, and that is what the genre is and how genre can move and change and evolve and drift over time about what's big, what's popular, what's coming up, what's waning, what's hit its golden age.
I think there's a reason that, you know, if we're talking like shonen mecha and stuff, there's a reason young men see themselves in that Gundam pilot or that Eva pilot or, you know, Kenshiro or Alita or whatever, who now see themselves as isekai protagonists. Like, if it's the same group of people and the only thing that has really changed is their circumstances, like the 14-year-old brain has not changed that much in the last 20 years. Kids are still basically running on the same hardware.
Well, they're 34 now.
Yeah, but I mean, even now, it's just, it's software changes. So what? The only thing that's changed is their information.
Yeah.
They have a lot more of it.
They still want to feel powerful. They still want to feel like the star of the show.
They want to feel a sense of belonging. They want to be able to get the things that they're worried about because they're a teenager and their bodies are going insane, as they always have. That's how teenagers work.
There's something interesting there, though, because if you think about, if you paint everything in the light of an escape from what's going on around you, and you think about those, the Gundam series and your Cyberpunk series and everything, the protagonists in those, while not necessarily like having magical powers or anything, they were special people.
Yeah, exactly.
They had special skills. Yeah. There was something about them that made them better than
other
people.
They are the chosen one. There's and a reason. Now, so instead of them being that, click. They are given that ability.
It makes me wonder why the popular thing moved away from this is how they always were, or they worked hard to get here or whatever, to, hey, I'm out.
Because
I'm
outie, it's easy.
Have a power.
I would argue some of that is because hard work does not get you as far as it used to.
Oh, yeah.
You could.
Nobody wants to work anymore.
Well, no, I mean, but like the level of competition, it's like, why does nobody want to learn the trade of carpentry when the furniture factory opened up down the street? Like, there is a...
Carpentry is kick-ass, by the way.
Yes. Wealth disparity is increasing. And I don't mean to say everything's political. I think there's two reasons I approach media. There is escapism, and there's also a desire to understand something that is bugging me or I didn't know was bugging me.
So yes. Why all the horror stuff?
Desire to understand something that's bugging me.
Oh, okay.
I in all seriousness, why do I have generalized anxiety disorder and panic attacks and love horror movies? My brain craves a life or death situation.
Because it allows you to safely experience those things.
And
that's why horror is as popular as it ever has been, because...
I'll tell you like a quick story about my personal life. I would have panic attacks about long drives. I was driving down the turnpike, and all of a sudden, I get the thing on my radio that's like, beep, beep, there's giant tornado watch coming, beep, beep. And then there was a cloud next to me. And I say next to me, it was miles off, but it was dark, and it was turning. Panic gone. I finally had something to do with it.
Here's a real thing to worry about.
You gave it direction.
Now I have the thing I need to fight or flee from, rather than having this vague notion that I must fight or flee and having no idea where the attack's coming.
Yes, interesting. Yes, you're in alert phase, but Solid Snake doesn't even exist. He's not here. You can't find him. He's just not real.
So we're going into like psychological corner here. Yeah. So you have just like an ever-present level of anxiety, and if there isn't something to focus it on, it's a problem.
I also have a thing where trauma makes it real for me. Like, it is easier for me to get emotionally invested and suspend disbelief in a world filled with monsters than it is for me to suspend disbelief in Bridget Jones' Diary.
Because it's too close to reality. This is the escapism.
Daniel is a piece of shit.
Because it's not just that they go to another world like this one. They very specifically go to a world completely unlike ours. This fantasy world. This, you know, I mean, it's usually a medieval setting.
And I'm not saying everything...
Nice, consistent, somehow familiar, but still new.
I'm not saying everything's got to be this deep.
But there's like, these are the things that sit inside all of humanity, even if they never notice the things that drive what they're toward. There's still stuff inside me that I still don't fully understand why I like certain things. I think we had ages ago, I think on the old podcast even, we had an episode about what genres you like says about you, or what internally does that. And like, I think on like, I liked Apocalypse stuff because it was a way to essentially have a fantasy adventure, but there was no kings or big systems. There was no royalty. It was just, you're out there, you form your little communities, and you're trying to build the best you can, even though everything's garbage.
It simplifies the complexity.
It simplifies, I'm not living in life. Whatever the terrible thing that was going to happen already happened. At this point, I'm just doing my best in my community to build things back up.
That's we've already ripped fantasy. Off the Band-Aid.
Well, and I think that was a big thing with zombie fiction was the zombie boom of the early 2000s was partly because people rediscovered zombies. There hadn't been a good zombie movie in a while, and it was cool. It looked cool. It was visually appealing. But the world was so screwed up that like there is almost an optimism in the zombie apocalypse.
It gave the problems a thing that we could shoot and behead and set on fire and not have to feel or think about it for not that much time.
Yeah, and there's something I think like I mean, these guys still exist. You know, you have like your preppers and stuff. There's an escapism in an apocalyptic setting.
There's an escapism in escaping.
You're going, oh, good. The world has ended. I don't have to go to my shitty 9-to-5 anymore. I don't have to worry about what my boss wants.
I don't have to pay taxes.
Right. No more taxes.
And I would argue that's also the fantasy of the cowboy thing. I'm on the frontier. A man's word is his bond.
Yeah.
I save the damsel. And
yes.
People
good
like
and
me.
Evil are clear. Yeah. I also like cowboy things.
But I think
small and clear.
The other side of this coin of like why they go away. A, circumstances change, and B, it gets the people who weren't the pioneers of the genre notice it and try to ape it success. They burn it out and they make it a cliche.
Well, I also wonder if there's something along the lines of like, if the real world gets too close to it, you know, because like we've sort of gotten too close to a zombie apocalypse. We've sort of gotten too close to post-apocalyptic wasteland. We're sort of getting too close to cyberpunk dystopia. Like, people probably don't want the escapism when it's the actual thing that's happening.
Yeah, it's too real.
Yeah. And so, let's go to a different world. Screw this. Give me some superpowers. Take me someplace else.
And it's cyclical to an extent. Like, those post-apocalypse things, they were influenced by American action movies at the time.
I mean, what? Terminator. Fist of the North Star was literally just Mad Max.
Yeah, Terminator, Mad Max, all those 80s action movies, they were huge. And that's why all those 80s manga characters, including the JoJo, looked like big muscle heads. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, I would say it's superheroes. And you got a lot of teens with secret jobs fighting demons.
Or are we gonna get into phase two of this discussion? Are we exiting the big picture and getting into small picture?
Well, I don't know. I mean, like, the thing I would have to answer is like, what moment are we in now? Why are superheroes so big? And I think they're probably on their way down.
And I think
now.
They're on their way out. Like, that's the thing. Because it's some, like you said, I think to your before we delve into the nitty gritties of the now, that it can be overdone and burn out, but also at a point just when enough time passes where it's like, oh, that's what granddad was into. I'm young. I'm not into what granddad's into. I'm into the new thing, not the old thing.
Well, and I think
that's a part of it, I guess, is what my point is. That some of it is just literally time passes and the cool thing, the hippies age up and then they're not cool anymore.
Well, and people
even
start,
if they were cool, supposedly.
People start thinking about it. They start making too many of them. And eventually you start to deconstruct even that. Like, okay, yeah, Shinji's an abused kid who's the only one who could pilot that Eva, but like also Shinji's a very selfish prick. Mm-hmm. And yeah, Batman is a guy who just wanted to do some good in his city, and he did what we all wanted to do and took matters into his own hand and fought for what he believed in. But isn't Batman just a rich guy beating up street level thugs?
Yeah, like, I know once the meta hole gets poked in it, it's hard to interact
with psychological trauma on top
cleanly as before.
I mean, Iron Man's doing the same thing. It is interesting. We don't seem to really have the idea of like Superman as it originally was, where it's just like, this guy is the best.
He's coming back, though. The new one's here, and it's really adorable.
We need good guys to do good things.
We need to go back to a simpler, more straightforward time in a way. It's that whole, again, I go back to my anime protagonist one. It's the cycle. We're in the nice boy meta, and I do like the nice boy meta.
Yeah.
But I think that can very easily shift into, like, just give me a hero I can get behind. My escape in is that the world is complicated. I don't want gray villains anymore. My life is full of gray problems. Give me a guy that I can punch without thinking or not having anything, and I can feel good. That is my escapism. I want a capital V villain. I don't want any flashback to make me think that he's had something. I just want him to be an unrelenting prick and that he gets beat.
You know, it's
Demon
funny.
King.
Yes. Go back. Again, literally, yes. Again, and I won't let me. My brain won't always let me to not go poking meta holes into things, but like, I guess that's an isekai. I guess that's the thing. They're incredibly straightforward.
It's interesting because, you know, you talk about, oh, we have this sort of like sweet boy revolution going on, but like it's still intertwined with that gray villain thing. Cause exactly what you said, the villains are still getting flashbacks. You might have the sweetest little boy protagonist saving everybody, but like he's going, hey villain, what's your deal? Like, oh, I feel sorry for you.
Like Jujutsu Kaisen is literally like the main villains of that are like, we are the major forces of the earth.
Hmm.
I am the forest. I am the land. I am the ocean. And we want to kill humans because they've messed up the earth. And it's like, yeah, they're kind of justified a little bit in that. And it's like, it's interesting. It's compelling. I don't want to say I don't like it. But like, I've had enough of that for long enough that like, it's not an anime, but oh my gosh, was freaking Puss in Boots Last Wish, where the main villain, what's his name? It's the guy who sticks his finger into the pie and he pulls out a plum. I can't think of his name. You know who I'm talking about. He's like...
Jack Horner?
Jack Horner. Literally, they are very clear, unrelentingly clear, how much he is just an asshole for no reason. They make specific points to go, like, he had a good upbringing. He had, even when his parents died, he had this entire business he can inherit. Like, he had literally everything he wanted. And he is just the sociopath because he is. And it was so refreshing to just have an unrepentant, awful, awful, awful human to see bested at the end.
It's interesting, though, they had to, like, specifically point it out and go, look, everything about him was fine. He's just evil.
He's just the, like, and because it's different because we haven't had this in ages. You have to tell people, no, he's just the worst. Like, he's literally constantly offing his own subordinates all of the time for no reason.
Well, you know what else is a little bit of a trope now, though? And I think might be a response to exactly what you're talking about. The fatigue of the gray villain is the hero who doesn't give a fuck.
Hmm.
And you've got your Itadori in Jujutsu Kaisen. You've got your...
You got your Denji. Why?
Denji, yeah, from Chainsaw Man.
Denji's 100% that just like, I don't care.
Yeah. Well, and power too. I mean, and people love it. They find it so refreshing that he's quite simply like, I'm not here to save the world.
I'm not here to be a moral compass or have to do all of these calculations. Other people can do that. I guess that's a different kind of fantasy. This is my existence. I am just here to get by and have a good time.
Here is your responsibility.
I'm doing my
best. Shove it up your ass. I'm going to collect my paycheck and hang out. And that's all they want to do. I do feel like in a lot of ways, the fantasy has gotten simpler. A problem I can solve and the ability to do it.
That's so weird.
A problem that I'm pointed to. I guess you're right. A thing that specifically I can solve.
I feel like you're definitely onto something there. But then like, so the protagonists and their motivation is becoming simpler. But we've still got these very complex things going on around them.
Yeah.
It's almost like the authors are, I doubt they're doing this on purpose, but it's almost like you're sort of distilling the essence of the world, which is like, hey, everything's really, really complicated. I don't want to have to deal with that.
It's a return tradition while still taking all the things we learned and all of the other eras into it. The world doesn't stop being gray, it just you put things in more stark contrast. We're not ignoring the complexities of the world. Superman just can't use his laser vision on a bank robber and the day is done. There's more going on, but you can still tell stories that are straightforward, where he is just genuinely a good dude wanting to do good.
Yeah.
And that there's a certain comfort in that now because we just don't have that. And like, yeah, Ben said, these things are all cyclical. Those things people have a desire for, we eat too much of it, there's too much of it, we get tired of it, we don't want to see it, and then at some point it has to come back around on whatever time cycle that is.
Well, I've mentioned it before, but the guy who did Chainsaw Man did a really good one-shot that I think everybody should read called, I think it's called Just Listen to the Song.
Oh, I don't know that one.
It's about a kid who makes a song for a girl he likes. And he puts it on YouTube and he sends it to her. And she shares it with everybody to make fun of him because she thought it was so cringy. And it winds up blowing up and going viral. And people start reading all these deep meanings into the song and saying like, oh, he's talking about American gun culture. Oh, he's talking about world hunger. Oh, he's talking about this. And it was very simply just him trying to get this girl to go out with him. And he's begging people to just listen to the song. And he can't, they're begging him for another song. He puts out another song, everybody hates it, and he's not viral anymore.
You know, I think that's a really good example. I was thinking about this when you were talking about Jack Horner, where they're outright saying like, no, there's nothing complex about this. And they literally put that in the movie. And I was thinking, I bet they're doing that to sort of get ahead of like the internet conspiracy theorists.
Oh, Onceler-isms, whatever the heck that fandom is called. Weirdos, that colony of weirdos.
Well, and like Lindsay Ellis had a video essay on this back when she was still making video essays about the Disney live action stuff. Trying to fix every nitpicky little problem.
Yeah, don't. Yeah.
That everybody had with the cartoon.
And
don't
I feel
listen
like,
to those people. That's how you make lame Gray Sludge movies and stories.
Yeah, and that the listen to the song sounds like that's a commentary on that exact thing.
Mm-hmm.
Is like, why?
It was really hard not to read it in the context of Chainsaw Man. Being somebody who has theorized about like
what this is about.
Chainsaw Man is so deep. Like, and he's just sitting there like, no, it's not. But the thing is, I don't think it matters what the author necessarily intended.
Because it striked at the time and the people see things. Like, that's the thing is, a lot of these things aren't necessarily the author's goal. It's just it hits at a time and the people, the populace, see something in it from the things they're dealing with and it resonates with them.
Yeah.
In a way that the author could sometimes never even never see coming.
The nature of art is such that if you're good at it, you will get your viewpoint of the world across to somebody else. It's better than language. That's the whole point of it.
Mm.
It actually makes somebody understand you on a deeper level. And I think whether the Chainsaw Man, I think his name is Fujimoto.
Yeah.
Yeah. So whether or not he intended me to get anything out of Chainsaw Man, he can't help but bake in a little bit of his worldview in Chainsaw Man.
Yeah.
And it can't help but make me see the world in a way that he sees it. And the idea is by like sharing all of that with each other, we get a little closer to like capital T truth.
Hmm.
But I think that's probably like the mechanism by which these things evolve over time. But then there's another question of like looking at the way things get popular and what's popular at a time of like, what moment are we in? Which is the hardest thing, like any historian will tell you.
Yeah, you can't know where you are when you're in the middle of it.
Yeah.
You have time has to pass for things to change for you to understand what was of the time and what just is or what's for the bigger, you know,
but I think it's,
all these things.
Do you think it's possible to have like a cultural GPS? Or is that something that's
what do you mean
never
by that?
To be able to tell where you are as a culture?
I mean, I
think it's a paradox.
I think we're getting
because
better at it just because how fast everything is moving that you and we're just so used to seeing these patterns. I mean, like this is once we exit this part and get to my little discussion on like specifically what's going on in watching genre and Shonen Jump, where it's like because I am so in the nitty gritty and we've been watching these cycles for so long, you can see like waves coming and going and kind of admittedly you're kind of predicting them and via predictions you're like looking back and categorizing and organizing like way quicker than you would before.
I think it's like the quantum problem of you by analyzing it you're changing it.
You can either
correct,
know
yeah.
your speed or your spin.
Yeah,
yes,
not both.
Correct.
Sorry, velocity. Well, so why don't we dive into that? Do you think you can get us close to where we currently are?
So, I mean, I can do it within the realm of Shonen Jump.
Okay.
Which is not very big in the grand scheme, but it was what I was thinking about. Because as somebody who tries to read all the new chapter ones that come out, I'm finally seeing the teenagers fighting supernatural, not kaiju, what's the word that I want?
Demons?
No, the Japanese ghost word.
Oh. Oni.
Oh, no.
Yokai?
Yokai-y stuff is finally on the wane. I'm not seeing a lot of the newer ones. That's not the... Not that they're still happening, but I feel like a new thing is starting... That's starting to slow down, and a new thing is starting to appear as authors go, oh, this is the new hotness. This is what I'm going to ape. Unless they do their own thing entirely, which they can do it every time. But when you're in the nitty-gritty, you can see people trying to, I guess to Ben's point, ape other people's things. Teenagers fighting supernatural things, I burned out super hard because there were so many of them, because everybody's trying to get on it, and most of them were garbage. And now, I don't know, I mean, at least for me, but I admittedly burn out on things a lot quicker than most people. Like, I'm tired of them. I'm done with them. There's some really good ones. I'm rereading Jujutsu Kaisen right now. I really need to catch up on, like, Dandadan was, like, a real surprise, real good one. Like, there are still good ones, but by and large, there's too much of it, and I'm done. So the next thing is happening, the Spy Family inspired thing, the Chainsaw Man inspired thing, stuff that feels like it was born of those popularity seeds is starting to sprout more as new unexplored areas of these heroes that they have to fight. I mean, maybe it's just the a mutation of the demon fighting, but they have something, this power, but there's also like a drawback to it, and the world's kind of usually more stark and negative and stuff like that. I'm trying to think of ones that I don't know how many I'm keeping up with that are still doing that, but I know there's a few that I've run into that I'm like, this feels like Chainsaw Man, kind of, sort of. Or like Spy Family, and technically Sakamoto Days, but I don't know how popular that is outside of stuff. But like, you're seeing more things of like, oh, this guy's an assassin. He's a secret agent guy. He's just really good at stuff. And that just slowly right now cropping up a little bit more. And being able to see it in that minutia of this wave leaving and this new one just starting to come in. And maybe I'm going to be wrong. Maybe it was just there's only going to be two or three attempts at it and it'll be gone. But that ability to look into it and look at the past of everything that's been through and to be able to parse that. I mean, it's not manga, but in a similar sense, it was like my ability. Gosh, how many years ago was that now? I guess it was only a year or two ago of being able to see like Western animation. It's like, we just had a golden age and we're leaving it. And we didn't even just leave it. We went into a dark age. Like, we are in. And I can see that now as somebody, like, when you're deep in the scene of something, I think you can see the bigger movements. You know the movements of the stones and what that tells you about the bigger things of, like, what's going on with this. But I think you have to be, like, it can't be that big and you got to be real deep into it.
I see we only have a minute left, so I'll throw out this bomb at the end, and then we'll just not discuss it. I went to the manga section the other day, and I would wager a full 20% of it was not from Japan. I think we're in the end of the age of anime.
Somebody,
I disagree. What I think we're coming into a golden age, especially as America, Western animations. Taking a big sabbatical, we'll say, politely.
Somebody posted on the Shonen Flop Discord, there's a shop was closing near them. It was like a games and manga place. And there were four pictures. And there was like the top two pictures. They're like, this is the Western media section.
But it's all like the full comic, stuff. The single issue comic books. And it's still full of stuff.
And then they're like, and here's the anime and manga sections. And they were empty.
Picked bare.
So, I don't think we're quite there.
I mean, I think we're moving into a golden age again. I don't think we're leaving.
How much? I'll just leave you with this. How much of what is currently popular today is Korean? How much of what is currently popular today is Chinese? And
I don't know.
I would say it's not a lot in the grand scheme of things, but it's orders of magnitude more than it's ever been in the past.
Well, and I would like to point out there that like it's sort of. Doesn't matter if it's Western, Japanese, Korean, Chinese, if they're all doing the same thing.
But what is that thing that they're doing?
Kermit just told us.
Anime and manga. I mean, I don't know. I don't think I think you're maybe seeing a wave out on the horizon, but I don't. I do not think we're there yet. I think anime and manga is more popular than it's ever. See the amount of money these small releases of anime movies are making in the West that have like maybe a week of showings, and like Japan's like, wow, we made money on this somehow.
But when they
we were that weebs are coming out of their homes and going to see these movies in theaters. It's this is, making money.
This is another topic.
Yes.
We can add it to the notes, but I would say at a certain point, that is going to make it not anime and manga. When they start making it for a Western audience, it's different.
Mm.
I think that's another episode. Yeah, yeah. That's another episode.
I would posit that perhaps what you're seeing is the ocean going out before the tsunami hits.
We'll talk.
Save this for later, Brad. I know you pushed the timer down, but this is the next episode topic. I know you want to. I want to too.
All right, guys. Do you know how old I am now? I'm an old man.
Oldest of all of us, I think.
And, you know, segment two is my segment.
Okay.
And so this is my old man yells at cloud time.
Oof.
I really need you guys to explain to me.
Sorry, everybody.
What the draw of gacha games are.
What? You're not on Genshin Impact?
Oh my god.
What? You're not on Honkai Star Rail?
What? Man. What is that? Is that a train-based girl game?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it is.
Is it actually?
Yes.
I've read that name and there's no other information in my brain. I just assumed it was like, what if the speed trains in Japan were cute girls?
I just need to point out before we get into this, and Ben's making fun of a lot of people,
but what if
that Ben plays
train,
Destiny 2.
But what if American trains had cute 1920s style girls related to them? Wouldn't that be cool though? It would be actually, that's what I'm thinking about it.
Actually, yeah. You played Destiny 2 on stream.
I did, but I haven't
streamed. That's not as gotcha.
Well, but the point remains.
We all played TF2 at some point, and I'm sure.
And realistically, and I was bitching about this before, the things like Destiny or Counter-Strike or Team Fortress make so much more sense to me because you're getting loot boxes, but there's a game that's going along with it. But I keep seeing all of these different games, in air quotes, where it seems like the whole point is just drawing. And like, there's not really a game underneath.
People could make the argument that Genshin Impact is a game. I'm not one of those people.
Genshin, I would sort of leave that one out. As far as I can tell, there's sort of like a explore the world and do stuff.
But it
kind
is
of
very popular. I've seen enough, not that I've ever watched them, but videos where it's just like doing more pulls in Genshin Impact, and it's just like, this sounds miserable.
And so many people are, oh, I gotta do my dailies. It's like, you're not actually playing a game. You're just clicking a button for 5 minutes so you can see some things spin around and then have a little confetti explosion.
That's their escapism. That's their genre escapism. That's their isekai. Never go up.
That's fine. And I have explained many times why isekai is my escape.
Yes.
And why I like it. I don't understand, like, I guess the dopamine hit of pretty colors flash and, oh, this is rare, but like, it seems so empty.
Brad, I'm playing your I guess, devil's advocate, angel's advocate. I'm trying to be
That's
your counterpoint,
yes.
But I agree with you 100% wholeheartedly. My inner hate of capitalism, where it's like, it's why I hate Magic the Gathering. So it's like, do you want to pay a lot of money to maybe be okay at a game? And it's like, no, I'd like to play one fee and then have a game to play with my friends.
Magic the Gathering, though, like, there's a game there that you
play. But you are still gacha-ing cards.
Only if you are really into it. Because you can just buy the starter decks and play a game with someone.
Yeah.
And I've done that.
Enough people I know have the brain worms that they need the cards for every new set.
Technically,
keeps coming back around.
Speaking, you don't need to pay for Genshin Impact.
Correct. You don't need to do that. There's a lot of mobile games you don't need to pay anything
for. Well, and
for.
That's, I mean, beyond the fact that, like, most of these, if not all of these games, have a monetary system in it to get you to pay money. I'm not, necessarily, I'm not here to say, hey, you shouldn't enjoy this. I literally just can't wrap my head around
it's snake brain
what
chemicals.
Is enjoying.
It's the, I had this conversation with somebody else and I forgot what it was, but there was some psychological experiment with rats where it's like if they could push a lever and a food pellet would come out, they would do it. But if they pushed it and they only sometimes randomly got one, the amount of lengths they would go to, they would just keep pushing it all the time, and all the little like patterns they would build to make sure the food came out, even though they had zero control
of it. Is that
the
Skinner box?
Skinner box, thank you. But it was that thing that was just like, if it came out every time, at a certain point they'd be like, I'm done. But when it becomes random, there's just something that they're like, it overcharges. They're like, I need to push this lever all the time because I want the food pellet.
Well, let me ask you this.
Even if they're full, like even if they're fed.
Let me ask you this. From a Magic the Gathering perspective.
Okay.
Yeah.
You could print your own card.
Yes. I respect that.
You could just download the image.
You could download a card, yes.
Of whatever card you need for your deck, and you could print it out.
Yes.
No one I know who plays Magic the Gathering would ever do that.
Well, it'd be hard to get it the right size and shape.
But it doesn't really need to be. You could print whole decks at a time. It just, if it's all about the game and the strategy and the deck building, you could have the entirety of the Magic the Gathering.
Print as many Black Lotuses card, as you want.
Yeah, you could have the entirety of the Magic the Gathering card library at your disposal.
It's paper.
And you could build strategic decks based on who's the smartest and who's the best Magic player. And you could play the game of Magic. No one plays Magic that way. The rarity makes it special.
There's definitely a, I'm going to collect something that's potentially rare on top of that. But I think, also think there's probably plenty of people who just buy a deck, you know,
yeah,
whether that's a starter deck
they just buy
or
a bunch of cards. And I think that we're getting off of the pureness of the gotcha thing that Brad did. Because at least with the, like, to your point, Ben, with Magic, as much as I don't like it, there is that sense of like, oh, the rare card is powerful. Not everybody has that. And as much as I hate the money system that makes that occur, it is a really interesting game mechanic that you have to work around in the world. And not just like, you have to keep pulling these things until you get the one color you want for this character you're playing with that only you can see.
To bring it back to Japan, I play Pokemon Go. And I do, I collect shiny Pokemon. Every time there's like an increased chance of getting a shiny, I'm out walking around my neighborhood going from stop to stop.
I guess that sort of is a gotcha.
Is that the
game,
same
as
someone who plays Pikmin Bloom, the Pikmin version of Pokemon Go, where I'm out there doing stuff? But that one, at least I have the excuse of like, this is getting me to walk more, a thing that I want to do and is good for me.
And
I'm
guess
not just
that's,
paying money.
That's probably why I never really connected those, all that, to like the gotcha stuff, even though that's exactly what it is because
it's a Skinner box. Everything comes back to the Skinner box.
Yeah, there's a point of, you know, going out and doing so. You can't just sit in your house and press a button. You have to like go.
But I have. But I have sat in my house and COVID brought us a wonderful thing called the remote raid pass.
Yeah, because nobody could go anywhere and get together, so they're like, hey, we don't want to lose this business, and also this will help people because a lot of people play
they tried Pogo. To take it away after Pokemon after COVID. People revolted.
Oh, I'm sure.
So the compromise was if you enter a raid with a remote raid pass, you're weaker than if you went in person.
I like that. That seems fun. As somebody who has no skin in this game and doesn't play it.
Yeah, but like I can't say I would spend a lot of money on Genshin Impact because I don't really enjoy the gameplay of Genshin Impact, but I understand Genshin Impact's kind of basically like a deck builder type thing. You're looking for like a particular kind of character with particular moves or whatever, and you build a team.
Is that how it works?
I always thought it was like Breath of the Wild, but
that's
anime
what I
girls.
Thought.
That's,
yeah.
But I, again, never played it. We're speaking from a huge spot of ignorance at the moment.
Oh, I thought like you needed certain characters.
No,
certain
I think it's
things.
Just your playable character and their little sound bites and whatnot. That's my understanding. Again, this is optimum old man yells at cloud segment because none of us actually know the contents of
well,
the cloud. We just like yelling at it.
If it's like Breath of the Wild, I mean, that seems like an even better game.
Well, and I specifically didn't bring up Genshin Impact because I am aware. No, I didn't.
Oh, okay.
I am aware that there is a there's an actual game there.
Okay.
Even though there's a huge gotcha component to it.
I mean, it's a loot box.
Yeah.
Gotcha and loot boxes are
very similar,
one and the same.
Very similar to, you know, your Counter-Strike and your TF2.
But is what it makes it gotcha in your mind is that real money comes into play?
Because not necessarily.
If you're playing like a video game, like if I'm playing like Borderlands or something, like there are loot drops. I'm not paying any money. It's just the course of the game, and I have to get lucky. And there is a joy of finding the rarity, and it's the question of am I paying for each hit at the possibility of getting the thing that I want?
In my head, I have this separation between a game with loot boxes versus a gacha game, where a game with loot boxes has a main game that you are playing, and the loot boxes are like extra on top of that.
Augmenting.
Whereas with a gacha game, and maybe I just haven't looked into them enough or something, but like the gacha games to me seem like while there might be a game there, the main point is the pulls.
It's collecting all of them. It's open the box of the vinyl collectible, and there's the one you really want, and you're going to get the dregs because that's the breaks.
So that's really what it comes down to. And there's probably an important point here, which is like, I really can't stand gambling. And I mean like, slot machines and like the random ones.
It's the dopamine hit. That is the Skinner box. It's the beginning answer. It's the check the vein dopamine hit.
I think the legal definition of gambling is a game of chance.
Right.
And a game of skill can have monetary prizes, but it's a game of skill, so it's not gambling.
Yeah.
Like a chess competition can have a prize, and it's not the same as winning money at poker. But I don't know. I mean, obviously, I think the draw of gacha games and loot boxes is gambling. It's the same mechanism in the brain.
Yes.
But I don't know. To me, when I think of gacha game, I think of Genshin Impact, which I obviously don't understand because everybody's told me that's a gacha game. But it seems to me like what the characters are hidden behind pulls.
Yes. Yeah.
So everybody wants the coolest character.
Yes.
And then the point of that, the payoff is you get to run around the world and other people get to see your cool character.
I don't even know if it's multiplayer.
Have, like, different movesets.
There must be.
It is multiplayer.
Because that's the thing with Magic the Gathering. Everybody gets to see your cool card.
If your game, like if someone says to me, oh, hey, I got to go do my dailies. Like that to me says, this is not a game that you enjoy playing. It is a gotcha system.
But is that not what I'm doing in Pikmin Blue, that every morning when I go on my walk, I make sure I'm planting my flowers because that's how I get coins to buy upgrades?
Yeah.
Is that my daily? Like, because again, I'm usually in your position where I agree with you, but there's something different about this. But there is also another thing where it is getting me to walk more. It is getting me to do a thing that I already like and should be doing. There's at least something else besides the thrill of the pool.
I think it's like, oh, just going for a walk can be boring. So you're going to listen to a podcast. You're going to do your Pikmin, do your Pokemon.
Yeah.
So you're filling in the activity you're doing with more stuff.
It motivates me to do this thing more often and for longer, which admittedly is a good thing. So I guess if you could somehow put these pool systems to that, because it's like, I get excited right now. I'm trying to finish out all these stupid roadside Pikmin I have to refinish, and they all stuck, and they have these stickers, but I can't get them to be marked complete until I get them all. So I have to level up these roadside Pikmin, and then I have to hope that they get the version that I don't have yet so they get to marked off the list, which, again, I guess maybe this is very similar to the gacha, where I'm just hoping it, but I'm not paying money. I'm paying walking outside.
Well, so I say I've played Destiny. I've played World of Warcraft, where you had dailies that you had to do.
Yeah, but aren't those... Those are like, you have to go and play the game and do a specific thing in the game.
Well, to an extent, but they're all brainless tasks. I mean, they're nothing that's going
to... I think that's the point.
To risk you killing your character or anything.
It's not... It's just... It's drudgery.
It's to make you log into the game.
But it's still a mission that is beyond, press this button, what did I get? Press this button, what did I get?
We have to do the basic thing to do that.
And, you know, if you boil it down, it's press the button a bunch of times, and then what do you get?
Press the Skinner box, and you might get the treat.
But
Because brain go woo.
And maybe that's what it is. Because you, the Skinner box experiment shows that you can't just give it freely.
If you got the best weapon right off the bat, you never mess with it again because you got the best one. So
maybe
you have to get garbage sometime.
Maybe my disconnect from all this is that in my brain, I'm sort of more into the Skinner box, where it's like I look at the rats that are getting something addicted every time they press the button. It's not necessarily something good every time, but they are getting something, versus the rats who have to press it a bunch and then something good might come out.
Maybe. But that's where the dopamine, it's the randomness is where the dopamine lives. If you got it every time, it wouldn't be there as much. It would run out.
The economy of dopamine is crashing.
It's ripe for exploitation. I think that's the problem.
Yes, Brad, you as someone who agrees with you, we collectively are I would say my position is better off not being affected by staying outside of those systems, being able to spot them and go, we don't want to mess with those because it's just a brain trick. It's a dopamine brain loop trick.
And I guess that's
to get you to, you know, interface with thing, because also give me money, give me time, give me your attention.
I would look at it this way. Watching TV, watching anime, for example, probably a waste of your time, but it's not as addictive. I think the problem with the gacha games and stuff comes in when you have goals in life, you have things you want to do, you want to wake up early, you want to do your homework,
no,
you want to work out. And instead of doing those things, you do the gacha game thing because it is the same part of your brain.
It's an instant, I'm feeling good,
that,
I don't have to
that
work for
dopamine
it.
Switch in your brain was meant to reward you when you went for the walk,
but
when you did the homework.
There's still something there, because like I have a couple games on my phone that are just sort of mindless, you know, block moving, it blows up kind of, you know, Candy Crush kind of thing. I don't play Candy Crush, but very similar. And I, you know, I go to the bathroom and I sit there on my phone. I play that game for a little while. I'm sitting waiting for a build to compile, and I'll
do that. Because you're occupying your brain. I mean, I do that with solitaire, where if I'm stressed or nervous in a situation, I will take out my phone and I will just start mindlessly playing solitaire. But there's no gotcha portion of it.
Right.
That's just,
no, that's my
that's
thing.
Just it's a meditation. It's here's a thing that is simple that I'm used to that I can do without payment or major thought that I can calm myself down.
I think at its core, I mean, you remove the monetary element. Of course, those games that I play, you can buy extra stuff, but you remove the monetary element. And at its core, it's a very similar mechanism to a gacha pull, but because there's more to it, there's more interaction in it.
Yeah.
It feels so different to me.
Gacha things can exist. Loot boxes can exist in things that have content that are good, but you can, I mean, it's what gambling is with a freaking slot machine. You can simplify it down to its base pieces. Skinner box still works, bud.
I guess the only difference I see with gambling is occasionally you win money.
Yeah.
With a gacha game, occasionally you win a waifu.
Hey, you've seen the internet.
So
this game has wives in it.
The add-on final question to this, which sort of is the point of why we're talking about it here on this podcast, is why did that come out of Japan?
Oh, they're gacha everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, but why? That's actually a good question.
Like, obviously, gambling is a big thing in Western countries.
Is
but
it
there's
because,
something,
like, proper gambling got banned, and that's why you get stuff like pachinko, and they're like, you put your quarter in the machine, and it spits out the little ball. Literally, that's the gacha machine.
Yeah, it's got to be something like that.
Maybe it's just because gambling got, that's just the way it took shape in their country when gambling got banned.
But even now, they churn them out. There are companies.
It's now a cultural thing, because people keep buying them. I think, I see that, like, again, like, the whole, like, you have to buy the box. There's a set of 12 different figurines you can get, but there's two that you want, and you have to keep buying them through all the garbage to get the one that you want. And I hate that.
Yeah, I think there's more like of a collecting culture. I do think there's a cultural aspect to it, and there could be some gambling stuff to it. But
I mean, there's a collecting stuff here too. It works the same over here, where it's like, I need to get the full set, so I have to keep buying them until I get the full set.
I mean, we've always had baseball cards and basketball cards.
Yeah, it's the same thing. Yeah. It's you have to pay per pool to get what cards you get in your pack to get the ones you want.
Like the exact same thing, isn't it?
Yes.
Oh, God, it's everywhere.
It's everywhere. It's always been. It's why gambling is popular. It's why Vegas exists.
It's why collection's a thing.
It's also why collecting things exist. It's also why I hate collecting things. Because it's usually such a capitalist thing.
Mm.
Pay money to have the little plastic thing that makes you feel better.
Well, I suppose I learned something.
This got really spicy.
I think I learned something, but not anything good.
So the only comment I want to say on this episode, and you know, if you pop in the Discord, I just need you to explain to me what Genshin Impact is.
Yeah, I think that's the real that's the real kicker takeaway. This entire segment is what is Genshin Impact? Tell these old people what Genshin Impact is.
No, we've moved on to Honkai Star Rail now. So
Honkai Star Rail.
Honk honk.
Hanyang.
What a ridiculous
thing. Send me a picture of your waifu.
I guess Honkai is a place.
Is Honkai a place? Send me a picture of your goose waifu that honks.
I would be interested, though, to hear from our listeners if you are into something that is almost purely a gacha.
Tell us.
What is it that you like about it?
Even if we came down really hard on your position, we clearly wish to understand your own thought process, or at least how you quantify it in your head.
Yeah, because I could ask my brother-in-law, but it would be really awkward after all the times I've told him not to talk to me about it.
So.
Yeah.
Are you a fan of Japanese snacks and treats?
Sure am.
Then you'll love Sugoi Mart. They offer a wide variety of popular Japanese snacks, candy, drinks, and more, all delivered right to your door.
Wow.
You know, recently we had a box from them, and that peach drink that we had
was not that curdled was, rice milk. It was delicious.
That was crazy because it tasted like you were drinking a peach, like a literal, if you could have made peach juice that didn't have like the juice part to it. It was really weird.
It was very Wonka-esque that it tasted like. There's something about, I don't know if I'm just not eating the right snacks in America, but there is definitely a running theme between Japanese snacks of some of them where it's just like, this tastes like I'm literally eating the thing that it's supposed to be.
Yeah, there's a thing with American or maybe even Western candy and stuff.
Yeah, corn.
No, but not even. Because it's like,
we're trying to escape reality of taste.
Yeah, like the fruit flavored things don't taste like the fruit that they are.
That's why it's not blue raspberry. It's just blue flavored.
A fruit has never entered the mixture.
No.
That's true. But the Japanese, they can do it.
Sometimes it's not even fruit. Sometimes it's corn.
But Sugoi Mart has lots of different drinks, and there's definitely something out there that you would find that you would like. And if you're a listener of this podcast, you can click the link in the description or use code APR15 at checkout to get 15% off your first order. So you can try any of those drinks that you want. I would recommend getting all of them. All at once.
Get all the Kit Kats. Ben loves those.
So just head to SugoiMart.com to shop their selection of delicious Japanese snacks today. So we just got done doing an Old Man Yells at Cloud thing, but there's actually one more that I'm really confused about.
Old Man Questions Cloud.
Yeah, that's probably a better way.
Cloud Strife from Final Fantasy VII.
So, and I think Ben is probably the most qualified to answer this question, which it seems like the normal thing, but...
I don't know if I want that title in this.
I don't understand. That's not quite correct. There's something about idol culture. There's sort of two sides that I see this on, because I'm also sort of against celebrity culture, but celebrity culture seems to be starkly different than idol culture, where like in celebrity culture, people can become obsessed with celebrities. I'm looking at you, Swifties, where it almost doesn't really matter what the celebrity actually does.
Would you say they can shoot a man on Fifth Avenue and get away with it?
Yeah, something like that.
Are we referencing something real with that?
Donald Trump.
Oh no, cut that out.
You never heard that?
No, this is
during
all from the podcast.
His presidential campaign.
Oh, he said he could do that?
In like 2015, 16.
Oh gosh, I blocked that out. Yeah. Oh yeah, cut this out of the podcast entirely.
No, this is standing.
No.
But so like with celebrities, a lot of people are into celebrities because they're famous. They move beyond the thing that they became famous for and are now famous just because they're famous.
The Kardashians. They're a different strata.
And I'm confused by that as well. I don't understand the mindset of someone who is obsessed with someone because they're famous. But idol culture is sort of similar to that, but almost a level beyond, where people are obsessed with idols to an even further degree, where
there's a reason they're called idols.
Yeah.
Right. But it seems so normalized, even though to me it feels incredibly strange and like potentially psychologically damaging.
Well, to full circle back to the first segment, William Gibson has a novel called Idolru.
Wait, huh?
Yeah, he has a novel called Idolru.
When did that happen?
What's it about?
It's about an idol.
Doing what?
When?
Future sci-fi shit. It's William Gibson. Oh, okay. It's not happy. It's not a happy story.
I didn't think it was.
So I guess, I don't know. Idol culture, so yeah, it literally is from like idolatry.
Yeah.
It is
yeah.
the English word idol. Idolru. And it is all about basically getting as much attention on you as physically possible. It is a like performance from both audience and performer. And I guess the weirdest thing about idol culture to me as an American is the nature of the Japanese entertainment industry. So like a popular idol group was AKB48. This is like one of the strangest to me.
That's the one with 48 members,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, they literally have 48
yeah.
girls. And they are not the same girls.
Which, that's just a platoon at that point.
Yeah. The Akihabara 48. So they switch out girls. They graduate.
Hmm.
And that's normalized in Japan. In America, when you follow a celebrity, you follow that celebrity.
I think it's not the group, it's the individual.
Well, the closest you can probably get in Western culture is like the pop groups, like you have like a Spice Girls.
But the Spice Girls...
The Spice Girls are the Spice Girls. There was never a new Spice Girl.
Oh, yeah, there are.
They switch band members, but like the Backstreet Boys are still performing as the Backstreet Boys. Right. And it's the original five. In America, we attach a lot of value in music especially, I would say authenticity.
Yes.
We like the singer-songwriter, the mm-hmm. Taylor Swift, the Bob Dylan, the like hip-hop artists. We like rappers that write their own lyrics. It's all about like what they have to say and who they are. In Japan, it's like well known that this is a product. It's accepted. There's a customer provider relationship to it all. And so for me growing up, the strangest thing was realizing like I would approach these groups like, you know, an American group. And then you find out like, oh, they're just switching members. It's totally normal. Nobody cares. Like in America, if a band changes a singer, that's huge.
It's massive.
Yeah.
There's probably some big reason for it and not just like, oh, you know, I'm just replacing them.
Yeah. Not she's 21 now.
Yeah.
Get out.
You've aged out.
Yeah. So that was the strangest thing, is that it's a product. And that's always been the strangest thing to me about the Japanese entertainment industry, is that they are just interchangeable cogs in a machine.
I mean, there's an element of honesty there.
Yeah, but it's more because they can get away with it. Whereas in America, they at least have the shame to hide it.
The place where the machine starts and ends in American music is more mysterious at times.
Well, yeah. I'll tell you another thing.
There's more plausible deniability where it can or cannot exist. Very Schrodinger's cat in that regard.
At the time of recording this, there is a huge Writers Guild strike, Screen mm-hmm. Actors Guild yes. strike. There is no Writers Guild. There is no Screen Actors Guild in Japan. Agencies own everything.
Yeah.
The idols do not, for the most part, write their songs. They probably don't even do their own choreography.
No.
They are paid performers who show up, And the product, the group, is owned by the agency. You are an employee. This is not your art. You're an employee providing a service. And I think that lets you get into like brand politics with idols. Like the way people, I don't know, have a favorite fast food restaurant. Or
you shouldn't have a favorite fast food restaurant.
The console wars.
I'm like hardcore Coca-Cola versus Pepsi or something.
Like dumb. But yeah, I get you.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of stupid examples. But it's like that to an extent. And the people involved in it are... I think the idols might be some of the worst paid of the people involved in it. Like the
Sure.
The idols themselves do not make a lot of money.
Even though they're worked to the bone learning all the stuff for these performances and to have to fit these perfect images.
Hey, guess what? It's like that in Western media too. Only the ones at the top are actually making good money.
Well, yeah. But if you're not...
Well, and the record label execs.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I mean, we could talk about like
Spotify there's the strike that's taking going on too right much now. Cut.
And, you know.
Yeah.
By the way, good job striking, guys. Keep it up.
We stand with you.
But, yeah, for them, I don't know. I don't know why anyone would want to be an idol. And we were talking about Oshinoko, and that's part of why I like it. They don't just talk about idols, but they talk about idols a lot.
And so with Oshinoko, I assume that goes in to, from what I've read of, you know, what you've written about it and what you've talked about, it goes into a lot of that sort of not necessarily glamorous part of idol culture.
Oh, yeah. It talks, so Oshinoko, I've noticed there's parts of it where it's talking about a lot of issues that are prevalent in the Japanese entertainment industry. It plays up the drama just a bit. I'm sure there's more that I'm not getting, but there's been some actual events that Oshinoko references that I think were handled a little too simply in Oshinoko. I won't give spoilers because it's still pretty new, but there are a few ripped from the headlines episodes. And the one thing with the idol culture is they deal with stalkers. They deal with harsh online criticism. They don't seem to have the same freedom that an actress would.
Right.
An actress, everybody knows they're playing a character. But not just Oshinoko. Another one that talks about this is, I think, Perfect Blue, Satoshi Kon anime movie. That is about an idol who struggles with the dissonance between her real life as an actual person and the act she puts on to be an idol. But it seems like with idols, they're like wrestlers. They can never break kayfabe. You can never see them on the...
I was literally thinking that, like, this sounds like the weird permeable space between reality and kayfabe of the construction of the show as it is. But they seem more...
If you see them
held by and hampered, but like they're still in like 70s, 80s wrestler zone where it's like the you can't see the good guy wrestler and the bad guy wrestler together at the same time.
Well, and I would add on to it that the performance they're doing is not a strong man, but a cutesy object of affection. So it might not be the most comfortable persona to live in all the time.
Exactly. Is that the main draw? Because I feel like we're talking, like, I can see a path where, like, a young girl would want to be comics, where it's like, wow, I can kind of sing and dance. Look at this girl, this musician that I idolize. I want to be that one day. But I don't, I guess to Brad's question, and not that you're necessarily the one that can answer it, Ben, but it's like, I don't know specifically why, especially these really big extra corporate-y ones, why they're as popular. They're like, what's the draw of it? Is it literally just sort of the parasocial relationship you have with this performer?
Well, I'd compare it to K-pop. K-pop probably has the same problem, but worse. Like, I mean, BTS stands.
That's probably the same thing.
Yeah. It's a similar industry where the agencies own everything.
Yeah.
The performers are performers. But
I guess people just like groups like this, and I don't know why. But I guess, again, I guess we have the American thing with, like, the Spice Girls and the Backstreet Boys and stuff, but they were like a specific set. They weren't just
They were allowed to date. Like, it seems to me like with idols, like with BTS and...
Yeah, if they're dating, they got to keep it like so secret that the agency's not figuring out that they're done for.
The fantasy they're selling you is that you could have this person.
Yep.
I guess there's something similar there. When you think about like Elvis Presley, and you remember seeing like pictures of his concerts, and the girls and some of the guys would be like throwing themselves at the stage.
Stadium where they literally can't play because the girls are screaming too loudly. And is that the basis of this? Like, I don't know what the normal idol fan in Japan looks like, because all I have is the stereotypical neat who's got his little statue, and like, I don't know how true to reality it is. I don't think it's that true, but I don't know that.
I think one of the fun things was with Oshinoko, they have the opening theme song, which is a bop. And it's
by, on our playlist. Check it out.
It's by a band called Yoasobi. And I think they're two people, a guy and a girl. And I watched this stadium tour they did where there's maybe 100,000 people at this stadium. And they've all got the glow sticks and everything, and they're just singing along to this song, which is called Idoru. And it's all about just how miserable and detached and like how the idol wants to love people, but she's broken. She doesn't really know how.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
And she hopes one day that, you know, all these lyrics she's singing would actually be true, that she could actually find it in her heart to love somebody, but she's just dead inside. And all these people are just sitting there with their glow sticks going, yeah, yeah. it's kind of creepy.
Irony is dead.
Do you think that comes from the same cultural space of, like, how coordinated, like, cheering stuff is in Japanese baseball?
Yeah, I think so.
Like, do you think that just comes from some cultural center of support? This person, this is how we do it as a collective.
Well, because that dancing thing is another thing that I understand that more, where like people memorize the dances that people do. And of course, now that is seeped over into Western culture with like TikTok and everything.
Yeah.
People are doing the same thing. And I conceptually understand that, even though I don't get it. Like,
what do you not get about the dance thing? It's fun to dance, and it's fun to do dances.
Well, you don't like live music.
You don't like live music. And you also probably don't like dancing.
And that's I was going to get to that as well.
You're coming out from like the worst position possible.
I don't necessarily not like dancing. I think the whole thing of memorizing a dance, because to me it feels like when you dance, you should be like moving to the music.
Have
it should
you
be
ever
an expression.
Done the Casper slide at a wedding?
Probably,
have you ever
no.
done the electric slide? Have no, you ever done no. any of the community line dances?
No.
Then you are missing out on what makes that special.
No,
you,
I'm not.
it's fun when everybody's doing the same thing.
Yeah,
when
it's you're like Zumba to an extent.
And again, I sort of get that, even though like it doesn't work for me personally. To the same extent that I understand people liking live music, wanting to go to a concert and being in that space, it's close fun. To the person doing the thing that they enjoy.
So
it's the outside of that sphere that becomes to me. It's like, what are you doing?
So I would say, like with Elvis or, you know, young Ben with Hayley Williams of Paramore, like we all have our crushes, but I think most
people, she's still going.
I know she's still going. I am married
now. Yeah.
I am married now.
Do you got one free pass?
I don't think my wife does free passes. So, what I was going to say there is, like, most of us know that's unrealistic. Most of us know we don't even know that person. We're just falling for an ideal, and it's a fun little fantasy to have. And then most of us can separate reality from fantasy in our heads, but you always get that person that can't.
But it is parasocial.
Yeah.
Many long times ago, not with you guys, on the old podcast, which is now lost to the sands of time, we did an episode on parasocial relationships. And it's like, even if you think you're not susceptible to them, you can be, or at least maybe I was and can still be sometimes, where it's like, I had Let's Play groups where it's like, I'm listening to these people talk almost every day. And you, unless you're really paying attention to it, you could start building this bond that isn't real because you've never met them. But you feel a connection to them because you've seen... Oh, God. Sorry, knocked over my water. I mean, admittedly, with these idols, it's a more manufactured history. But, like, you can see that... history and them opening up and what their struggles are or whatever their story is. And again, in that case, I think, again, talking from maybe not a fully knowledgeable place, that a lot of those are manufactured as well, but like that can connect you to somebody's general plight and want, and you want to see them succeed. And so, you're like, I'm going to be a part of this machine that hoists these people up, because then we go back to the whole Pepsi Coke thing, because they're my gal, they're my group, they're my yada yada yada.
Yeah, but I think where the where it starts to become like a big problem is what happens when they do something you don't like.
That's the problem with the parasocial relationship, because you never actually know these people. They're not real.
Do you stop listening to them? Do you write them a hateful comment? Do you...
I mean, I personally just stop, but I'm clearly the rarity with how much material is on the internet.
At the doorstep with the head of their dog? Like, that's where it goes sometimes.
Yeah. I wonder if that's my disconnect, because, like, before I ever got to a point where I would have gotten into celebrity in some way, I already knew that all celebrities had something dark.
Well, it's a performance. There's parts of them that they're not showing you because they're not flattering.
Yeah, they're not. An actor's performance isn't real. That's what makes them an actor. They are acting. You don't see freaking of us being on a podcast. If you listen to us, there's how many hours of us talking that you've heard us talk about things. And literally this very episode, we got really deep about things, but you never truly know us. You know us on microphones.
Oh, like, everybody knows us really well.
Well, there's a couple there's a couple of things that could, again, maybe inspire like other topics, but I'll list a few like bullet points. Like, the Japanese media, in my opinion, and I'm talking about the news media, is like horrible. Just in, not in terms of like, like they're such milquetoast, weak, annoying people. And they ask these like softball questions. They play into the fantasies.
And I wonder that's sort of where my mind
is it
was going.
Just collective escapism.
No, I was thinking like maybe the main disconnect between celebrity in Western cultures versus idol and celebrity in Japanese culture is that Japanese culture in general has that sort of expectation that everybody is putting on a face all the time.
They don't complain.
Right.
You don't see a lot of negativity. You don't see as much negativity.
Yeah, until it turns into black tar heroin and comes peeking out when somebody gets stalked.
And so the
comes oozing out the
because that's a normal thing. An idol is putting on that act all the time. Nobody thinks that's weird. That's what everybody does. And it allows someone who connects with that idol in some way, whether you know, they think it's romantically or otherwise, to get so much deeper into it than, you know, Western celebrity where you have gossip rags all the time that are like, look what this person did.
I mean, come back to our part one of this. I could view it as escapism. Here is this magical human that exists that is clearly above us. Let's continue to lift them up.
I think part of... So I would say that the people who disconnect from reality, who can't separate fact from fiction, are probably, I think that it's mostly mental illness.
Yeah, they are mentally unwell.
And I think there is probably not a huge difference per capita in the amount of mental illness between Japan and America. But where it gets weird to us with idols, and this is like kind of the second bullet point, is like, there is a very different relationship with cuteness and femininity in Japan.
And youth.
And like one of the things about kawaii culture is it started as a way for women to take power back. And it doesn't, it's maybe not intuitive for a Western audience to understand how cuteness could be taking power back, because like
it seems like they're infantilizing themselves.
Yeah, putting on a dress,
thus giving them less power.
Yeah, and what it is like these things that were cute were not valued at all by Japanese society for a long time.
Mm.
And then it turned out that women did actually have all of this economic power to buy products, to dictate what got made. And girls would become hyper cutesy as a rebellion because school uniforms are not super duper cutesy. They are supposed to be, you know, back when all this stuff got popular, long skirt goes down in the ankles, sailor fuku, that was what it was. And so like putting keychains and stuff on, that's not part of the school uniform. Mm. That's getting Hello Kitty stuff. Just unapologetic cuteness is rebellious.
Kawaii is punk.
Yeah. And no, it really is. Like,
I know. I laugh not that it's untrue, but that it's just such a at odds comparison, but it fits from what you're telling us.
Yeah. And so that's like maybe part of the draw for girls to get into these idol groups is like the way you perform feminine power is a little different in Japan. And it's like a topic I'm not the most well read on as this 35 year old dude, but that's a part of it. And so that relationship with cuteness is different. And the actress who is interviewed about her personal life, like we are to understand she plays characters on the screen. Off the screen, she is the actress. The idol takes it one more step.
Is the idol.
They stay in character while they're interviewed. They stay in character off the stage. You can show up and take pictures with them. You can do the handshake events where they shake your hand in character.
That's the part that I super never, will never, ever, ever understand, because that is the ickiest stuff to me.
But that's where they make a lot of money.
Exactly. But it's like, what, I guess to Brad's original question, it's like, what would, could, who would I want to specifically go just to shake somebody's, like that, I mean, that was the modus operandi of it, which admittedly, you essentially have that at like conventions where people wait in lines for an autograph line, but there's something about framing it as a handshake line that just feels so much weirder to me.
There's definitely, like in Western cultures, you have celebrities, you know, you might think of like a David Tennant, like a Doctor Who thing. Or
even a small anime con where it's like, hey, here are the actors of these dubs. There was a video gone recently that had Charles Martinet voice of Mario. Yeah. Like,
well, this cuts both ways. So, men and women both attend these events.
Oh, I know.
There are events where like pretty boys doing that. Visual K. That's the thing.
What is that?
Oh, Visual K is kind of like the. that's a topic right up there.
You can't present this. I need to know what Visual K is.
That's a topic right up there with idols. So Visual K is like, it's a style. You'd have to, you can Google it. If you Google Visual K, I think it's spelled K-E-I.
Oh, okay. Good to know.
It's, to me, it looks like hair metal. It looks like that kind of like big wigs, makeup, but like guys do it like with hair metal. And there are these Visual K bands is super popular with women, and women show up to these events before the concerts to get their Instax Polaroid picture or whatever. And
take an Instax with the scumbag.
Yep. Yep. But the thing is, because the agencies own so much of the music and stuff, you're not necessarily getting royalties off of the song or as much as you should. You're not getting a writing.
You have
credit.
To get it off of the live events. You are the worker. Yeah. You have to go out and do the gigs because that's where you make your money.
And you get a much larger percentage of the money from the pictures you take.
Even though it's icky, that's how you get bank.
But and again, like that's definitely Western celebrities do that as well. They have the autograph events. They'll take pictures with people. But like, that's never framed as a handshake event. But it's never framed as you get to touch this person.
I mean, I feel like that's a thing because it's like, I don't know. I personally don't have this, but I know the thing where it's like, he touched me. I'm never washing this hand again. Like, that's in American culture. We've seen it in the past. They're like, I've got his baseball hat or something like that. Like, that's like the whole idea of like touching somebody important.
I think.
And I don't know how much of that, like, so much of that connects back in my brain to like, you know. Christianity things, but I feel like that could be any religion, and then that could go beyond religion into the new religion of celebrity.
There's two. Yeah, I was gonna
say religion. God.
There's two reasons.
Why didn't I figure that out?
Well, it is literally idolatry.
Yeah,
and I mean,
why is our justice and our God?
I think the reason it takes this different form in Japan and it's so alienating to the West is A, our relationship with authenticity. B, our relationship with cuteness, and C, just our relationship with femininity, masculinity. Like, in America, if you were a dude who went to a Spice Girls concert, you would not tell your bros that you did that.
Back I mean, in the day. Yeah, certainly.
Now.
More so now, but yeah.
More so now, I think people would be jazzed to hear about somebody going to.
But I still think, even in America today, if there was, now, the kawaii stuff that gets popular in America today is like baby metal.
It's the gimmicky stuff.
Yeah, and I'm trying.
Feels more authentic.
I'm trying to think of a second one.
We don't know any better.
But like baby metal has an edge to it.
Yeah,
just a little. And the music is solid metal.
Yeah, there's something to it.
But I can't imagine AKB48 coming in and like these cute, not sexual, just cute, like frilly made outfits, doing their little song and dance, and like a bunch of dudes, like the audience just being mostly dudes.
Yeah.
That's a difference I see between America and Japan. I think like Tim Rogers has a really good video essay on a video game called Tokimeki Memoriaru, which is a dating game for the SNES.
Oh.
It's not super sexual. And in fact, like a huge chunk of the player base is women.
You have talked about this before. I can't remember if it was on here or Words About Books, but
the reason I mention it is because in Japan, and this was Tim Rogers' point, was the Western media covered this as like, how sad is this? All these guys pretending to date virtual high school girls. Whereas in Japan, it was just kind of not a thing. Like it was just another game you could play. Like obviously people date, more people date than kill people. So surely
that's why we need the video game.
That line of a thought is very convincing.
Yeah. So surely like this isn't that weird of a thing to think to make a game about, but
I want
to
do the things I can't do in real life.
But because you weren't killing something, you weren't shooting something, you were just talking to girls and trying to get them to like you and like trying to form a social bond. That was just horrifying to Americans and not a big deal to Japanese people. And like women would play the game and it wasn't seen as gay or anything like that.
I mean, now we've got a dad dating simulator in America.
Well, yeah. And I think nowadays,
the KFC dating game.
Nowadays, you can start to make that argument. And I think we've started changing our minds about it. And I think idol culture is probably not as weird as it once was. I think a lot of people know vaguely what it is.
Yeah, we understand it better.
But,
I mean, also, I think there is, to an extent, going back to a little bit, that I think that's a part, that a piece of the puzzle you're missing, Brad, is that live performance, when done well, is impressive.
So, there, before we wrap this up, I did want to explore a little bit of the media a bit. You know, we've talked a little bit about Oshinoko. That's obviously something you've recommended before.
And Perfect Blue.
Perfect Blue. Is that recent?
No.
I thought. It sounds like most of the stories about idols are not fun.
I think those are the ones that we personally find interesting, right? Because we are not interested in idols as it is, so why would we be interested?
Is there something that explores that in a more positive light?
Oshinoko does explore it in a positive light. It's not finished. There is a dichotomy going on in Oshinoko where I think the story starts off with, it's horrible. Why would anyone want to do this?
Mm-hmm.
And then I think as the series goes on, it's going to seek to answer that question of like, they constantly talk about how like, it's so miserable, but when they're on stage, they shine. There's something magical about it. And there are fans who aren't weird. Like there are fans. I think what Oshinoko is arguing for is like an understanding that these are human beings. We can have this. Like by and large, the fantasy they're selling you is just that like there is like happy, fun stuff in the world. And it's not.
No, I can get on this because your points earlier is gelling with everything. Like, this is my pro wrestling. This is, I go to this place to accept this fantasy and have this good time.
Yeah. No, I was just thinking, it's like, yes, we can have this. Stop being weird about it and just enjoy it normally.
Yeah. No, well, I think that's, but there is.
That's the problem, is some people can't do that. In the same way that you can't you, Brad, cannot suspend that fantasy in your brain.
Right.
Some people are the other side of the spectrum and they get in too hard.
Have you guys ever heard of an ARG?
Yeah.
Alternate reality game.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which I also don't like.
I like.
Brad, you're just you are so boring.
I like
those.
Why
are you the worst?
I like those, but I will acknowledge.
I don't begrudge other people liking things.
There's a problem with them to some extent because the unspoken rule of an ARG is like, I think it's cool as long as you don't take it further than I would take it.
Hmm.
Like, that's my problem. I'll give a real simple example. Is there was a show, I think it might still be on Netflix, called The Haunted. And it was supposed to be one of those stories where people who experienced ghosts tell you about the haunting in their house. And for like the first couple episodes, it's like the normal crap. Like, I heard knocking, I saw an apparition. And then it tells, like, and it's supposed to be these people actually saw what they said they saw. Whether or not it was real is another matter. Mm-hmm. But this was their experience.
Yeah.
Then these ladies come on and start talking about how their dad used to kill hitchhikers. And he buried the bodies all over their house.
Nunny?
And I keep waiting to hear... And then the cops came, because this is like a real story and they're telling people about a murder on camera. And that never happens. They just get away. The house burns down, possibly destroying evidence.
Is this real? Is this a nonfiction show?
So a bunch of people write into Netflix and say exactly that. I was one of them. And I was like, because I have to know. I was like, do you know somebody just talked about, like, tell me the show's fake. Like, tell me it's supposed to be fake now. And they wouldn't. They said, as far as Netflix is concerned, these people are telling the truth as they know
it. That's keeping kayfabe, brother.
But I think it's a problem. It crossed the line for me when there was an actual, like, when we're talking about actual murders. You can't joke about that because people do actually get murdered.
Yeah.
And I would want that to be taken seriously every time. Like, I don't think that's a line you can't cross. You can tell me you saw fish monsters in the wood and have your little H.P. Lovecraft thing. You can tell me you saw a ghost in your house and that there was a legend that somebody died there. But you can't tell me you watched a murder and didn't report it.
Yeah.
Like, that's a line for me. And I think that's the thing with this. That's a very extreme example of the thing with idols is I think it's cool as long as you're not, as we're all playing by the rules.
As long as you understand the line between fantasy and reality exists, and you can play with it because that's part of the fantasy of it,
but there's
never confuse.
And but there's always going to be money in tricking dudes, too. There's always going to be money in tricking vulnerable dudes.
That's kayfabe, brother. That's where the money is. You actually want to see these two men fight, even though you know it's not real.
No, I mean, there is money in either an idol or her agency convincing a mentally unstable guy that this girl actually loves him.
Because then yes. they will spend more money.
So that's where I would say it's like,
yeah.
Do I, like, I'll give you, if you're interested in idol stuff, a couple idol groups you might want to check out. Atarashi Gakko, new school is what that means. But I think they only go by Atarashi Gakko.
They did that music video, right?
Yeah. I think Baby Metal's good. I like AKB48, some of their stuff. It's not all great, but you know, you could go from there. And of course K-pop is huge. You don't K-pop, need me to tell you about that, but the music is good. It is fucking scientifically engineered in a lab to be good.
I've certainly listened to some of that music. I enjoy some of it. The celebrity of it is my line that doesn't get crossed.
I, like I said, I like ARGs. I don't buy into the idol fantasy. I'm simply, even when I was the right age for it, I know that's not real.
Yeah. Like, I've never seen an idol show live, and I'd be curious to see how I felt about it if I saw one live.
I don't think they really play it up too much. It's mostly cuteness. It's not sexual. It's not.
When I should say, as
that's
far
not
as
what
like,
I'm implying. I'm just curious because I can think what I'll think about it from these manufactured things of, but I've never seen the genuine article live. A live performance viewed live is such a different energy that you can't, I mean, it's, I go, again, I'm working with the things that I understand that are similar to this, which is wrestling. Wrestling on television and wrestling live are two very different experiences. Mm. They can both be great for different reasons, but there's just something about the electricity of being in the room with that, of a live performance, same thing with like watching something on a tape via watching a performance live of anything, that can have just some special X factor, some feeling in the room that you can never truly get without experiencing it firsthand.
And I guess the challenge for me is like, when I think of like how to describe it, when I think of events like this, I guess the closest I could come is like a restaurant or a casino where the staff are really nice to you. Because they work for tips.
Yeah.
And you have to realize that.
I don't like that either.
Well, and I understand, but like there are people that fall for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are people that fall in love with those people just because they were nice to them.
Yeah.
Even though they didn't imply anything.
Yep. Yeah. People like to be shown a little bit of the.
And I should say, like, as far as the performance and stuff goes, and we talked about the dancing before, I can appreciate a well choreographed, well executed dance routine. And to some extent, then I understand a fan of that thing wanting to learn that dance and do it because, like, they liked it.
Yeah.
So that there's definitely parts of this that I get. But then just some of it, it just, and maybe it's that potential mental illness thing where it's like some of this just goes too far.
You're and, playing with danger.
Yeah. You go out of the realm of the kayfabe, the wrestling, and into the realm of like not being able
you've
to separate
made kayfabe,
reality from
you've
fantasy.
Made the fantasy into actual reality,
right?
And it doesn't work because it's not reality, and that's the point.
So watch Oshinoko.
Watch, okay, as we're cooling down, I do want to say, because it's like my one big thing with idol stuff, watch Zombieland Saga, and I feel like that was the follow-up. I believe the season 2 is called Zombieland Saga. I want to say it's Revenge, where a bunch of different idols and general celebrities are resurrected as zombies from across Japan's eras. I think the oldest one's like an old... I don't remember if she's like a geisha, but she's of that ilk of like female entertainer. Well, again, cultural.
I would even say your Akiba Maid War, the Maid Cafe stuff is adjacent
to this. Yeah, Maid Cafe has got a little bit
definitely.
Of idol stuff in there. But no,
what
Zombieland
a horrifying thought though. Zombieland Saga, like, hey, you were an idol your whole life and you're dead now. You thought you escaped, but nope, you have to do this forever.
Well, all of them die. But no, there's some, definitely some commentary on the industry in that, but by and large, like, I think it's a good time, like, it's similar to Ben's anime where it's like, there's some ups, there's some downs. It's not just how icky things can be. There's also some of that. I believe also one of the Yakuza games where you get to play as, one of the orphans Kiryu looks after becoming an idol. You get that, and she gets into dance fights.
I'll tell you what.
Was another good look at like how up and down this whole industry can be.
If you rub two brain cells together, you're going to do a lot better than the Red Light District arc in Demon Slayer.
Yeah.
That was probably the worst.
Oof. Let's not think about
We've
that.
We've already gone over
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I know.
Let's be done. I don't want to talk about that anymore.
All right. End of topic.
So everybody should go back and listen to that episode. Check out all the other stuff.
Tell us about, I keep wanting to say maid stuff. Tell us about idol stuff. Tell us a group to check out, why you personally like it. Like, I know we did some stomping, but like genuinely we are coming at this from a place of wanting to genuinely understand where people are at. And even though I was mean to Brad, I won't be mean to you about how you feel about things.
It is important to note in almost all this stuff that, like, I'm definitely coming at this from a place of I don't get it. That doesn't mean I don't want other people to enjoy it.
That doesn't mean he can't get it. There's always a possibility. People can change. People can grow.
And, you know, I think probably the best way for me to understand it is if people tell me their experiences with it. Obviously, we have some gap in that knowledge.
Limited
here.
Experience.
You know, Ben's obviously in it a bit more. So we have some knowledge there, but like, yeah, none of us are like fully into that scene. So if, you know, if anybody's listening and is fully into it, come talk to us about it.
Yeah.
My Japanese pop crush when I was a kid was a Yumi Hamasaki. Check out IU Trance if you're on Spotify.
Well, thanks for listening to That Time I Got Reincarnated in the same world as an anime podcaster. We hope you enjoyed listening as much as we enjoy recording. To find all our social media links, such as our Discord, Twitter, Threads, Patreon, Facebook, and more, visit our website, animepodcasterreincarnation.com. You can also find articles and various topics, as well as new manga reviews. Although I haven't seen one up there in a little while, so...
Don't you be making faces at me, guy who's never written a blog post.
You could go check out my blog posts on Oshinoko, and just listen to the song. I did one on there.
You can go shove it.
I have an article up there. It's not a review, but... In fact, it's our most popular...
Okay, Mr. Big Box. Okay, I'll freaking write another manga review.
Well, we'd love to hear from you on all of those social platforms, or you can leave a comment on the site. You can even just send us an email to isekaisenseisama@gmail.com. We're always looking for feedback on what you'd like us to talk about and different ways to interact with you. If you prefer to listen to the podcast in high-quality stereo, be sure to check out the YouTube channel, where we simul-release all of the episodes in high-quality stereo.
They're actually simul-dubbed. We re-record it for the YouTube.
ASMR.
And before we go, I want to remind you to check out Sugoi Mart, where you can get 15% off your first order by using the link in the description or by using the code APR15 at checkout. Ben, you got anything interesting going on with Words About Books?
Do I?
Do you ever?
Oh, I do, actually. There's one thing I want to plug. Probably by the time this is out, we will be covering A Court of Thorns and Roses by Sarah J. Maas. And I think if they're not already aware of it, the heroin addiction crowd would really like that book. I was getting so much Otome Isekai vibes.
Whoa, interesting.
Reading this book.
Well, you definitely have to plug that again on the next episode. But is that's the next episode that's coming out?
Yeah. Yeah, that'll be out this Sunday.
The day before this. It's out now. Go listen now. Well, thanks again for listening. And if you find yourself reincarnated in a different world, I hope you get a solo YOLO. All right.
Did
I guess
only set
we'll
that to 45
on.
Minutes?
Yeah.
Why? It's segment one's always the longest. I thought you were going to do it at least an hour.
I didn't expect us to just go, oh, the timer's off.
Well, that's the point of the timer, Brad.
No, I wanted to set it to a level where we're like, this is...
Oh, if we had really gone into that, we would have been going another hour.
That would have been another hour. That's why it's another topic.
Oh, I wasn't necessarily saying that particular thing.
Yeah.
That's what I just said.
That was the we were trying to land the plane, and then a new destination was found, and we had to go there. And it's like, no, land the plane.
I don't care if people know there's a timer. we should all be tracking our time. That's a lesson to the podcasting audience.
You gotta charge your time right. Sure. Oh, I don't even know what segment two is. This is gonna be great.
Wait until you hear it.
I know. That's why it's going to be great, because I don't know yet.
You're going to hate it?
Yeah, you're going to hate it.
Oh, Ben, do you know it?
Yeah.
Oh.
I asked this morning.
I thought you were just assuming. Okay, all the more fun. Okay.
I put it on the Discord.
You probably saw it and forgot about it. Who knows?
That was fun.
That was... This is the problem when we have a, hey, I feel about this, and the answer is, me too.
Yeah.
More intensely, if not. Man, we're like, I kind of like this timer because it gets us fucking moving.
Also, cancel idols and everyone who likes them.
I don't know if that should go in the segment or that should be the last of the Easter eggs at the end. Because it's a, I don't know if we had our big emotional denouement there, and I don't know how much it would just completely undermine it, have it directly after that.
I looked up gotcha terms just for this.
Oh, disgusting. I'm like, what are you doing? Why? Ugh.
You can tell people AI wrote that.
You can't visually see my face, but I am like, this is a cringe. This is a chemo.
On purpose.
Literal recoiling in face, like a bad smell or just rancid. Rancid.
Kimotsuwarui.
I was like...
What is it? You are making me uncomfortable?
You make me feel bad.
You make me feel bad.
Like you make me feel badness.
Yeah. I was going to have it just be like, I hope you get a good pool. But I was like, I wonder if there's like actual...
You can do, yeah.
Gotcha terminology besides it. And then the first one
solo
I read is
yellow
like...
Solo is such a solo fucking YouTuber.
Do you know what it means?
Garbage.
Find yourself an idol group and get a good pool.
Do you know what solo YOLO means?
You got it on the first try?
Yeah, it means you got a like an ultra rare on your first pull.
That sounds like a thing. It's the same energy where people watch unboxing videos. There's just some deep thing where people, especially when people like watching people open packs, and it's like, because now you get to experience the dopamine hit, but you don't need to pay for it.
Yeah.
Like, I ain't gonna lie.
Or have all the garbage.
I've watched people react to Oshinoko.
You have.
I have. I was like, there's certain scenes where I was like, God, it was such a good scene. I can't re-experience it for the first time, but I need you to.
I understand, like, let's plays. I get the why people, because like that's like, oh, you sit at your house and watch your friend play a game, right? I don't understand reaction videos.
I watch them just for specific scenes. There's certain scenes
you
I want
to see. It's Brad. It's the ability to understand how somebody else thinks about the thing that you care about.
I guess yeah. I can definitely understand that at
but
a conceptual level.
But you don't have to talk
level.
Or know these people. They just exist and put their videos on YouTube. I don't like watching them personally because I feel like they are very just again the dopamine box of I'm looking for them to either agree with me or I get pissed when they disagree with me, which is not useful.
Oh, they always agree with you or they don't post it.
What?
That's the thing. Like, they're never unflattering to the thing everybody loves. Mm-hmm. I've never seen anybody react to Lord of the Rings and hate it, even though I know some of them must have.
I have watched little bits of reaction videos, I think almost exclusively to music, like music videos.
They're short, yeah. That's...
But I've never actually watched, like, a whole one. It's always like... Oh, I want to see just like a couple minutes of this because I'm really into this song, and it like just comes up in my feed or whatever.
Yeah,
and then I'm like, okay,
it's like
I'm good.
I'm googling something. It's, do you mean these Yahoos in like reacting to it? I go, no, I don't care what these fuckers think about this thing. I want to know about the thing.
Yeah.